All right, now, last week we were looking at the last part of chapter 2. If you have died with Christ from the course of the world, why, as though living in the world, do you dogmatize? That is, do you put together a set of traditions? That's what that really means. Touch not, taste not, handle not, which all perish with the using. They all go on, with the using, they go unto corruption. According to the ordinances and teachings of men, that is to say, of human origin, which things are actually, logon means a body of knowledge, having wisdom in self-imposed worship or self-styled worship. It's self-styled religion. That's what this word means. In the King James text, it's called will worship. But what it really is self-styled religion. And lowliness and denial or dishonoring of the body, that is, a denying of the body, not in any honor to the fulfilling of the flesh. All right, so the main thrust last week is that you've got human ordinances. They are self-imposed ideas and regulations and so forth, which are very religious, but they may not have anything to do with the vitality of living with Christ. They're human ordinances. The church is full of them, of these special thoughts, regulations, and of course, there are thousands of religious views in the world that are all in the same pattern. They're things people have dreamed up. There are the books on the market. The shelves are filled with books. They're all self-help books. They're like trying to be your own doctor. You get as much negative stuff as positive out of it, and you don't know what the difference is. Some of it's good and some of it's bad. Satan will never let us be at rest with just following the simplicities of Christ. We've got to be our own brain surgeon or whatever to try and put our own heads together, and they just don't come together. The human reason is ridiculous. I have to say that. I know enough about it to be able to say that to you. I've studied it long enough. And we're screwy. That's what we are. We're all screwballs. As far as our brains are concerned, we've got a pattern in there of thought, and we get hold of that and stick to it, and that's all there is. Nobody can tell us anything ever. I talk to hundreds of people, and it rarely does any good because the mind is made up. So, like the guy says, my mind is made up. Don't confuse me with the facts. But people insist on shaping their own brains and holding on to their own ideologies, and so it's all right with me. I turn down talking to people that I don't think are going to pay any attention anyway. I did this last week. A woman that expressed some dissatisfaction or lack of confidence in my counseling, and so I went later, and that was a little while ago, and later she and her husband wanted to come and talk to me. Her husband said he and his wife would like to come talk to me. And I said, I'll talk to you any time of the day or night. But I said, it's no use my talking to her because she doesn't accept it. So why waste my time? It's all right. She doesn't have to. I said, I can think of a lot of reasons why she wouldn't like my counseling. But I don't want to waste my time with her. She's not going to listen. It's just, you know, it's ridiculous for me to sit there and spend an hour talking to someone. And the mind's already made up anyway. So what's the difference? So I don't do it. I used to do it more than I do now, but that happened a couple of times in the last week. There's no use wasting time. Well, what am I really saying to you? It doesn't really matter to these people a whole lot what Christ has to say, unless it jives with their own understanding of things. Jesus himself, they'd argue with Jesus. Same people. They wouldn't accept what he said unless they agreed with it. If they agreed with it, they'll accept it. If they don't agree with it, they don't accept it. You might as well be talking to a stone wall, though I just don't waste my time at that. What he's really looking at here, there's a lot of nutty notions having to do with the psyche and with religion. People think they're so smart about how they handle their psyche, and they want to do it themselves, and they want to get their self-help books. They load up on all these books, but they're not willing to really give attention to Christ. But even if they give attention to Christ, they louse it all up by listening to too many other people, too, and reading too much other stuff. So Christ isn't really preeminent, except as he becomes sort of a patsy to... I mean, what happens is they take Jesus, and they take this psychologist and that sociologist, and they put them all together and decide what they want to believe from all of them, each of them. Now, that is an unworthy way to handle Christ. You either listen to him or you don't. I don't like to encourage people to come to meetings of mine unless I feel they're really, really willing to listen to Christ. I don't want to serve Christ up like a smorgasbord. You know, they come and pick at this and pick at that, and they take a sample of this and a sample of that, and they eat what they like and they leave what they don't like, like little children. There was a school of thought in the field of nutrition that little children, if left alone, will eat what their body needs, and you give them a tray of things, and they select what they want to eat, and they'll always pick what the body needs. So they used to do that. That was an experimental thing. They've gone through all kinds of experiments. We've been 50 years trying to overcome the last one in education, the experiment in education and the progressive education process. We haven't yet overcome it, but they experimented in the same way in those things. So they put a tray of food out there and let the child pick what he wants to eat. Well, we all know the answer to that thing. But I'm not going to serve Christ up like a smorgasbord for people to pick at, like the herring Danish food board. Well, now we come to the gut stuff here, if I may say so. Setting aside all of our human idiocies, we come to the third chapter and the first verse. If then you be... Well, in the first place, look at the parallelism. In verse 20 of chapter 2, if you have died with Christ, then he says, why do you play around with human religious thought? Because you're dead to this world, after all. Nothing this world has to say is of any value. You're dead with Christ. So he's the one you got to talk to. Now, we have not only died with Christ, we've also risen with him. If then you have you be risen together with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is at the right, is seated at the right hand of God. So you've got negatively... Forget all the ideologies and idiocies of the world. I don't care how smart the psychologist may be. If he's not a Christian, what he has to say doesn't mean very much. He may hit the truth once in a while. Like I've often said to people, a broken clock is right twice a day. So you can find things in any psychology book that probably square with what reality is. But for the most part, it's just ridiculous. So you don't... It'd be like trying to read Karl Marx and find a few good thoughts in it about economics. You might stumble upon something. I mean, for example, it is true that labor is a significant part of economics, but it is not also, it is not true that labor is the most substantial part of economics. It's only a very small part of it. And what the communist countries have totally misunderstood is the meaning of the surplus. And you can't put a value on the surplus product, which normally surplus product is what is essential to building the economy. But if you put everything on the side of labor, you have no way to evaluate surplus products. So anyway, all of that's neither here nor there. But I'd say you can read Karl Marx, but you don't read Karl Marx to help you with your economics if you're functioning in a capitalist society. They're just so discontinuous that whatever he might say that's right would be out of context with capitalism. by the same token, you don't read The Psychologist to find a few good thoughts about how to put your life together, because they're just screwy. They don't come from the right basis. Well, okay, so now, on this positive side, then if you have been raised with Christ, then you seek the things that are above. No decision you make in this world has anything to do with whether it is reasonable in terms of this world or not. The question is, how does it square with Christ? That's what's important. Are you doing what Christ wants? Now, just believe me, dear friends, these brains of ours are screwy as a leg bolt. Why, they're twisted. Our brains are twisted from years and years of misunderstanding and misinformation and misapplication of things and wrong decisions, and those brains are just twisted. If you think you can get a reasonable view out of that brain of yours without Christ, you're kidding yourself. People go on making mistake after mistake, and they follow a bad mistake with a worse one. Trying to correct the bad mistake, they make a worse mistake if they try to correct it from the human reason. So it just doesn't mix, like trying to get oil and water together. There's no way it's going to mix. If you have been raised with Christ, then you're going to have to listen to Christ. Nothing else matters. If you are in a trial, a situation of affliction or test or trial, the only thing that matters in that affliction is how is it preparing you spiritually for what Christ wants, not how is it going to give you a nice life. So if you're raised with Christ, seek the things that are above. What goes on this earth is just temporary. Like I've said to you before, I've used this illustration many times. If you're going to move to Los Angeles from San Diego in 2 weeks or a month, how much time are you going to put to trying to establish yourself in San Diego? How much time? You're going to go join the garden club? You're going to try and get elected to the PTA? You're going to try to run for city councilman or what? Nothing. All you're going to do is do whatever you have to do to prepare yourself for Los Angeles. That's what you're going to do. Every move you make in the city you are leaving has to do with the city you're moving to, practically, except for the minimal responsibility. Now, the same thing as far as Christ is concerned. It doesn't mean, as the old saying goes, bo diddly. It doesn't mean anything what you think about your life on this earth as to how nice it is or how nice it isn't. What matters is how is it preparing you for life with Christ. It isn't going to be nice, and the more you really identify with Christ, the less you expect out of this world. So it's quite, Paul is giving an extremely important point. He's not giving you a commandment here and saying you've got to be religious all the time and think religious thoughts. When it says seek those things which are above, he's not saying sit all day reading your Bible. That's not what he's talking about. He's talking about seeking to square yourself with what Christ wants, because nothing that goes on down here in this earth is of that much value. If you have then been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is at the right hand, is seated at the right hand of God. The expression, to be seated at the right hand of God, does not mean that Christ is on a visible, material throne and that God is on a throne. It's an expression that means that Christ is the administrator or executor of the Godhead, of the ideas of the Godhead. In other words, if the Godhead, by which I mean the full, multiple, faceted God, Father, Son, and Spirit all together, that's the Godhead. The Godhead is a spirit entity. Christ is the one who executes the will of the Godhead. That is, Christ is the active agents bringing to pass. That is what it means. It's like saying Christ is the prime minister, God is the king. But in a certain sense, Christ is not, if you have, of course, if you have the king of England or the queen of England, as it is now, You have the Queen of England and you have the Prime Minister. Prime Minister is a separate figure from the Queen, or the King in some countries. You've got a King and a Prime Minister. The Prime Minister means the chief minister of all the ministers, or the commissioners, or the bureaucrats, as they are. We call them secretaries here. In our government, we have a president and we have secretaries, Secretary of Treasury, Labor, Commerce, so forth. In other countries, you've got, instead of that, to call them ministers, the Minister of Education, Minister of Finance, so forth. The Prime Minister is the one who is chief of these ministers, who executes the will of the King or the Queen, as it is now the Queen. Now, Christ, of course, they're separate persons. So Christ is like the Prime Minister to God. He executes the will of the divinity, of the deity, but he is not, in the same sense, a person separate from God. You do not have two separate persons there of acting independently of each other. Christ is the expression of God. It is, since Jesus, the advent of Jesus, you have a bodily presence called Jesus Christ. And that bodily presence is the expression of the fullness of the Godhead. All that God is funneled through Jesus Christ, so to speak. That is, is ministered to us or is projected to us through Jesus Christ. So Christ is seated at the right hand of God in the sense that he is the executor, the prime minister of the affairs of God. Now he says, set your, not affection, the word affection in the King James is not quite right here. In the King James it says, set your affection on things above and not on things on the earth. Well, that gives us the feeling that we're supposed to like holy things, and not everybody likes holy things or religious things. People like myself, we do not really like religious things. I do not get any great thrill out of going through religious institutions and seeing religious artifacts and all that kind of stuff. But I am tied to Christ, you see. But I'm not very religious. Now, to us, we think to set your affection on things above would mean to like religious things, and that's not what it means. The Greek word means to let the inclination of your mind be toward the things that are above. Let that be the tendency of your mind. Let it be your reigning attitude. Let it be toward things above. Just like I said, I think a perfect illustration is that if you're moving to another city, the prevailing attitude has to do with that next city. Let your prevailing attitude be toward the things that have to do with Christ. He said, for you have died, and your life is hid with Christ in God. Thus, of course, let's take it on a different level, use the same analogy. Let us say that you have been hired by an outfit. We'll use the city of San Francisco. Let's do that. So here, you've been well. Perhaps even you might have been tapped by the mayor of San Francisco to come and be his administrative assistant. Now, that is going to be the prevailing relationship that you're going to be concerned about. Thus, as you prepare to move to San Francisco, your mind is on what instructions you have from the mayor of San Francisco. Because you're going to be his administrative assistant. And you say, when are we coming? Where are we going to live? You know, a lot of things that have to do with that new relationship. And if you had perhaps been the city manager of the city you're leaving, perhaps you've been city manager in one city, you're going to be city manager in another. You've been city manager of one city. Now, that you're going to close out. It doesn't matter what that city thinks a city manager ought to do. What now is important is what does your new mayor think a city manager ought to do. That's what that whole thing means. you have died and your life is hid with Christ in God. In other words, the only thing that makes any difference is not what do people on the earth think you ought to do, but what does Christ think you ought to do? That puts it in a better relationship. Now, the rest of the discussion there has to do with shoring up your life in terms of the things that your new partner, your new associate, wants. Since you're hidden with Christ, that is, since you are part of Christ, you put away those things that he doesn't like. Let us say now that you were into the political machinery. We'll pick some different cities so people won't feel left out. Let's say you were part of the city machine of Chicago in the days of Mr. Daley. Now, for all of people, what people may think of Mr. Daley, he kept Chicago going because he was able to keep his footing between the criminal elements there and the political elements and the business elements, and he had a way of keeping his footing. I don't know that he could do it without compromising, but that's not my point here. The person that worked with Daley in Chicago would have to have a certain standard or lack of it about his life. He'd have to say, well, this is the kind of thing we do in Chicago. Now let us say that you are seeking new employment, decided to become the city manager of Wheaton, Illinois. Go from Chicago to Wheaton. Now, Wheaton happens to be sort of the citadel of American fundamentalism or of evangelical Christianity, since it happens to be the college town for the most predominant general independent Christian college in America, dominating a particular segment. But anyway, you'd have to say that the town of Wheaton, Illinois, was a vastly different kind of town than Chicago. There's a new set of rules that you're going to have to relate to. You're not going to bring your Chicagoese approach to Wheaton. It's a new ball game. Jesus has a set of standards here. Now, Paul says to us, if you're going to be related to Christ, you've got to quit lying, cheating, and stealing. You've got to quit calling each other names, and you've got to quit doing this and this and this. If you're going to relate to Christ, these are things you want to get rid of. The normal, tawdry practices of the human flesh should be cleaned up because you got a new boss. And what went in Chicago is not going to go in Wheaton. You change your whole manner. That's the basis of what he says. You are with Christ now, therefore put to death your members which are upon the earth, put away these things, lying, cheating, so forth, the things that you accepted. Now, in some of those earlier societies in Greece at the time this was written, there was a pretty loose standard there. In fact, as you read the New Testament, you may think to yourself that these people were a pretty rough lot because he has to tell them, you want to quit killing people and quit... Well, you wouldn't really have to make that the basis of a sermon in today's moderate community. You wouldn't have to go into Wheaton, Illinois and say, now the real thrust, Jesus wants me to tell you people, you've got to quit killing each other. But I want to tell you that if you lived in the 19th century in the West, that might not be a bad sermon topic because people went around killing each other. They fought duels, they squared off, they had vigilante practices, and the great equalizer was a sex gun, you know. And so you could say that in those days. You couldn't say it today. I mean, it wouldn't be a fair fit message for the average congregation to talk to them about not killing each other. Well, Paul says some things here to this Colossian group who are Greeks that you might look at and kind of wink, kind of bat your eyes a little bit and say, well, what in the world does he have to tell them that for? Aren't they Christians? Yeah, they're Christians, but they were doing a lot of things that today Christian people tend to feel are not so good. he says some pretty strong things here. Just take a quick look at it, and then I'll close. I didn't really intend to go into them deeply. He says, mortify therefore your members which are upon the earth, fornication, uncleanness. Now here's a word which means the kind of erotic thing of lust, evil desire. But there are two expressions. One is desires that are on the unwholesome side, and the other is passion that is more or less on the erotic side. In other words, one has to do with passion as lechery or something like that. Then the second word has to do with just unwholesome desires. They may have to do with a desire for making money, for example, for the desire for fame, things that are not, that belong, desires that belong to this world that are not wholesome. Perhaps it might be desires for gambling, for going up, maybe you might get to Las Vegas and get involved in all of that, but that's something different than the thing of passion, which is before that. So he says to watch the matter, these matters, and then covetousness, which is idolatry. But then he goes on to say later, now put away also wrath, anger, malice, blasphemy, shameful speech out of your mouths. Do not lie to one another, seeing you have put off the old man with his deeds and put on the new man, which is renewed in knowledge after the image of him who created him. Well, I'm going to stop there because I want to go more deeply into those other things another time. The thrust here, the essence of it, is that we, after all, have a new relationship, so we ought to identify ourselves with that new relationship in a reasonable manner. Well, we'll pray now.